Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros. Welcome back to another edition of Leave It in the Ring Radio. God, I can't even say my own show's name, man. I'm running late. Anyways, this is your host, Dave Duenich, with my co-host, Amilcar, on the other line. And this time, you can hear Amilcar. Amilcar, say hello to everybody that's tuning in.
Hello, everybody. Well, anyone who was listening to Blog Talk heard me filibustering for as long as I could last week. I just think I wasn't, you couldn't hear me on YouTube and vice versa.
No. People could hear me. It was vice versa, exactly. You could hear me on YouTube, but you couldn't hear me on Blog Talk, and nobody could hear you on YouTube. But it was a big old mess. I explained it after, we're back, and we're here to talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. If you want to call in, certainly can, 347-215-7598. We are an hour late because of life issues. I had to go take care of some stuff. I had to go pick up my wife at work. We're one car down right now, and hopefully we can get that all sorted out, because this was the first time. And what an inconvenience, because I was so ready to go on at 5 p.m. Not an inconvenience to my wife, but, you know, not saying that she's inconvenienced, but it's just, you know, rushing. And then I was, like, texting the milk car, telling them, like, all right, I'm going to try to be there by 6, because I was kind of in that feeling like, shit, dude, we're not going to do a show. And we have so much to talk about, especially from Saturday's fight, a lot of interesting things to talk about. Like I mentioned last night when I went on live late last night on YouTube to just let everybody know we were going to be on Monday, and things should be going smoothly. Hopefully everything's going smoothly as of right now. All right, so let's go into the rundown here on Leaving the Ring on Saturday night on Fox Sport at the Micro Theater. And Los Angeles, you had the two headlining fights was Erison Lara versus Gary Vendetti. And then you had Alfredo Angulo go in with the replacement, which was Vladimir Hernandez. Hernandez and Angulo, which was an unanimous decision for Hernandez. He got all the same scorecard, 98-92, across the board from all three judges. They got it right. They saw the right fight that was happening in front of them. Nobody had their face mask over their eyes when it came to judging this fight here. Let me ask this question here before we get any further about talking and breaking down what Hernandez did against Angulo. Amilcar, or anybody that's listening right now, who's slower, Joe Joyce or Alfredo Angulo?
As bad as this is going to sound, and I think Joe Joyce is very slow, Angulo was barely past frozen on Saturday. He was like a piece of ice slowly thawing as the fight went on. He made Hernandez look like, Zach Judah in the first four rounds of a fight.
I was gonna say that. You know, he made him look like Zab Judah, lefty
with speed. You know, it was like Zab Judah for the first four rounds of a Zab Judah fight. I mean, he was just ripping off combinations, body shots, mixing in the uppercut every now and again.
As slow paced that it was, I have to admit though, it was really, really entertaining.
It was.
You know, Angulo, who I've met and known and you know, covered when he was in the ICE unit, detained. Then when he got released, we had him on. I've golfed with Angulo. One hell of a very humble person, all around great guy. Anybody that came across him or had a chance to meet him, this guy will take all the time in the world to sit there with his fans, take pictures with his fans, and everything. You know, so I love Angulo. Before, even though we're making jokes right now, Angulo would have even be laughing if he was here, because I'm pretty sure he's aware that He looks like the way the internet used to sound, you know, taking its time to pop up on the screen of your computer.
And we're obviously
know?
Fans of his, and we remember like his wars from like, it's like seeing a different fighter. And, you know, I don't like saying that people should retire, but Alfredo Angulo should retire. To me, he wasn't even the biggest 154-pounder when he was fighting. And, I mean, where does he go at 168? You know, where does he go at 168, which is arguably the deepest weight class in the sport?
Clay Collard, maybe? Would you like to see that? I'd like to see that.
I don't know, maybe. I don't really know.
Here's the reality. Here's the reality. Yeah. Angulo is not going to retire. He's not. He's just not. It's not going to happen. You know, now he's with Abel Sanchez. Abel Sanchez was saying this is the best, you know, that we have not seen, in, you know, haven't seen in a long time. And I'm like, wow, okay, Abel. You know, I don't know what would make you, what would prop you to say that, but.
Is Abel getting slow?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I was like, that statement there baffled me very much. So, and with that kind of a statement, and even the reaction after the judges had announced the scorecard, which again was 98-92, Angulo's reaction to that was really like, I thought I won this fight. Like, he was in such disbelief, you know, that he had a quicker reaction of what the judges said than him throwing punches, to tell you the truth. That says a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it does. And I honestly don't really know what to say in terms of who he'd go against. David Lemieux has moved up to 168, right? I don't know, maybe a David Lemieux fight, but I kind of see that as being dangerous.
I see that, you know, far too dangerous.
He takes a good shot, but, and that's kind of the problem, you know, because it's that accumulation of punches. I don't know, maybe a John Ryder, another southpaw, but John Ryder gave Callum Smith all kinds of problems.
Exactly.
I just don't really see anyone in, I don't know.
I think the match that was made with Caleb, if he's going to continue on, it would be against him. You know,
but
if
you can't beat Hernandez, I mean, that really says all you need to know.
I know that.
Right?
I know that. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, Hernandez is far from anything special. I mean, before we got on the show, I was telling you that you can't even, in my books, rate him as a journeyman. I mean, this is a guy who comes into fights on last-minute notice as a substitute. I mean, and that's what he was on Saturday. And he was, like, rifling off combinations on Angulo. I mean, I shouldn't be laughing about it, but that question you asked still has me chuckling.
Outlaw says Abel Sanchez doesn't have any good fighters left in his gym. That could be the thing. You know, I think he's hoping that Angulo is going to come back to life and speed is going to come back in him, and which he never really did have. I mean, he was slow even then in his prime at 154, but this is like, I mean, even turtles are faster at the moment. But, I mean, he still made a good fight.
Yeah, he did make a good fight. In fact, it was more exciting to me than the main event. But Abel Sanchez needs to stop it. I mean, he's sounding like Joe Biden when he's not reading a speech or is off teleprompter. You know, that's just crazy. I mean, anyone who's seen Angulo in his prime knows that that's obviously not the case.
No, no. It's not. You know, the thing that Angulo carries that you would hope that some fighters had was a guy that can absorb punishment the way he does. He knows who he is. He knows that he's never going to have slick feet, fast hands, good head movement. It's just not there. And My concern is like your guys' concern and everybody else is that he's going to get hurt. But here's a guy that was robbed of time of him getting big fights because he was detained without, you know, from his will of being here in the States. You know, there's some backstories of why he was by a certain promoter that was upset that he didn't want to re-sign a deal. You know, don't quote me on that, but that's the rumor. So ICE showed up and detained him, and they were trying to deport him and everything. And so he had lost some time. So I have a soft spot for him because I have, in some way, I'm thinking maybe he's kind of trying to play catch up a bit here because, you know, this was stolen from him. You know, the right to feed his family and the right to be in the ring and possibly the right to see the best of Angulo of what was left of his career. He was robbed of showing the world that, and he's trying to play, you know, catch up. And unfortunately, though, he doesn't have a way to introvert his career. And so we could see that. It's not going to happen here.
I mean, if you're not a heavyweight and you've lost, like, all your speed like he has, it's tough to see him winning any fights against top people, you know. I mean, he moves down to middleweight. He gets some of his speed back. I don't know. I mean, maybe a fight with, like, Jaime Munguia or somebody like that might make sense. I mean, Jaime is not the fastest either. But I'm just thinking about big names out there that might work because, you know, you look down the rankings, the other people don't really have big names. I don't really think it would make sense, at least in the United States.
Well, the name of Angulo, El Perro, is still very recognizable. And it still is going to draw people to watch. And the majority of people that were tuning in that I saw on social media were really tuning in to watch Perro to see what was going to happen, how he looked.
Yeah.
Was it a fluke against Kid Chocolate, who was very inactive at that time too? But it was surprising. To me, it was a bit of an upset. But I was real. I was being a realistic person saying like.
What, okay, against Quinn? Against Quinn, there was a big upset. But I think Quinn, the way he was even talking, he was like halfway out the door in terms of boxing.
Right. Right. Absolutely. You know, and I'm wondering if the Hernandez fight is a sign that you should hang him up. I don't think it is, man, to tell you the truth. I think with Angulo, the reaction after the 98-92 scorecards, I think he thinks, I won that fight. And if he does, I think the fight between him and Hernandez, if it could be made, should be a rematch.
But a rematch?
That's more of a real, a rematch. I think that's
that's a good point.
Going off.
We don't need to see him really at all unless he rematches and wins against Hernandez convincingly. And I think that's a fight that can be made on another PBC undercard. So
Absolutely.
I think you're right about that.
They have the story there.
Yeah.
There is a story there. You know, I mean, you know, like Nado says in the chat room, Angulo should be fighting low-level prospects and journeyman boxers. And that's fine. Absolutely. I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And look, if he's looking for bigger money, I think it's a dangerous fight for him. But I think it's not that dangerous because this guy's limited as well in his boxing skills. Would be against Clay Collard. I think that is a good fight for him because he should make a good chunk of change there, you know. But other than that, moving away from Clay, I don't want to see him get in there with somebody in their prime and get you know, sparked up and possibly get really hurt, you know. I mean, Hernandez is landing some flush shots, but, you know.
But he's also not a guy that's really known for punching power.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So, you know, we don't know the extent of damage, but we do know this. We do know that the extent of damage is when you get an accumulation of punches. Okay. So that's the one thing that I think Sanchez and Team Perro need to sit back and kind of look at and say, do we continue on? You know, I would say like yourself and most folks is, if you can't, I would hang him up. That's pretty much. I don't think I would have to make a speech.
Yeah. So what did you think of the main event?
Okay, so let's move on with the main event here. You got Arizona Lottie versus Gary Vendetti, which was the scorecards is 116-12 and then 117-12 twice in Los Angeles. You know, I said this. I thought that maybe if Laura's legs looked a little bit more shot, you know, if it had to force them to stand and trade, we might have gotten a much better fight. But what we got was even at a kind of declining Laura, he's a far better fighter than what Gary was able to possess, you know, present in that fight, you know. So this was a typical Laura fight, which is that he doesn't look for the KO unless he has to. He's okay with boxing. He's okay with boring the audience because for him, it's all about getting the win and getting closer to fighting one of the other belt holders in his weight division. So, you know, I think after the second, third round, I really didn't have a prayer for Gary for, you know, at all. I was like, okay, this is going to be a Laura night. And that's pretty much what we got, you know, which was another night, which we saw last week with Sean Porter. A stay busy fight for them to continue on to get closer to another belt holder. But, you know, the thing was that Sean Porter made his fight with the other guy, Formella. They made it a bit more exciting. You know, at least Formella had, you know, try to impose his will and his skill over Porter pushing back. Vendetti couldn't do that. He's too small.
No.
I mean, he was tiny, bro. You know, he was really small in there. So,
yeah, I think Formella was a much better fighter than Vendetti. And Formella's biggest problem was he just didn't have a punch that Porter had to respect. Saturday night with Lara, I was pretty impressed by him, to be honest. I know it wasn't very exciting to watch. I actually watched the first four rounds and then fast-forwarded it because I was getting tired. I had already watched a lot of boxing and watched the remainder of it. Yeah, and I watched the remainder of it later. But, I mean, Lara's jab is really good. His footwork is excellent. And he's got that kind of a whipping backhand punch that punishes you if you do happen to get around the jab, which Vendetti didn't really do very often. Vendetti just was a man without ideas or maybe the skills to execute his ideas. He was too square, wasn't using angles, couldn't get under and around Lara's jab often enough. And when he did, he ate hooks and like I said, whipping right hands. He's got that kind of whipping punch.
He does. You know, the thing, look, I can't be impressed. I can't be impressed because the prime Laura would have probably knocked him out. You know, he would have at least caught him coming in. Because Gary.
Yeah, I agree. I just meant for his age. Yeah.
For his age.
Prime Laura would have knocked him out for sure.
Exactly. Because, you know, Vendetti didn't impose anything. You know, and I expected, like I said, if his legs were under him, he was able to move and resemble what the prime Laura was, this should have been an easy fight. And it did. It ended up being exactly that. But what would have impressed me is if that he would have went for the KO and got it. But because he had a guy that didn't pose a threat at all. But instead, we saw a guy that worked the ring and played it safe against a guy that didn't have a prayer. And that to me was like, okay, this is Laura still showing us that he's not fully back. I mean, there's no fully comeback from him, you know. And it also showed me that somebody with pressure, somebody with size is – going to show us how old Laura is, and then he just couldn't do it at all. He couldn't show us the age of Laura, of who he is at this time on Saturday night. We just didn't get that from him at all. If you guys want to call in, certainly can. 347-215-7598 here on Leave the Ring. We're going to open up the phone lines in about another 5 minutes here. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel and hit that like button and that bell so you know when we go live here. What's up to Omar Naro Fernando? And anybody else that's watching the show here live, any last thoughts about Laura? What do you think, man? You think that he's going to get the opportunity to face Rosario and Charlo, or even the chance of maybe Jared Hurd or J-Rock? I'd rather see him. Honestly, I'll tell you this. I think he needs to stay clear away from Rosario. Even if Rosario wins, I think he needs to stay away from him, okay? I know that he's going to test himself. I know he thinks he can still get in there with this young gun. I just don't think he has a chance in a prayer, because that style for him, especially with his legs, though it did look fresh against Vendetti, it to me could be a bit deceiving. And Rosario is going to really put the pressure on him. Charlo, a fight with Charlo would be completely different. But then again, when Charlo gets aggressive, he could be that guy. His size is a big factor. J-Rock, to me, is the guy because that he's been knocked out so vicious, and he took such a massive beating and a hard beating from Rosario Banana that I think that fight may tell us a little bit about both men, of where they go and move on to the career. You know, do they still have anything left to face the young lions in that division? That's the fight that I think I would like to go. Hurd, I don't know where he's at. I don't know what's going on with him. The last time we saw him, he looked like a completely different fighter. But Amilcar, what do you think, man?
I would personally like to see him rematch Hurd. I like revenge matches. Lennox Lewis is one of my favorite fighters of all times. And one of the reasons I respected him so much was the fact that he revenged his losses. And so I'd like to see Lara take on Hurd. And see what he can do. I mean, his other losses are against Paul Williams, who he can't rematch, although I thought he did really well against Paul Williams. I actually thought he won that fight. And I don't see him getting a Canelo fight anytime soon. So, yeah, Jarrett Hurd is the person I'd like to see him fight. And then if he's successful, you know, maybe then he takes on the winner of the of Rosario's fight. But he's got that WBA regular title. My guess is he'll probably continue to defend it for as long as PBC can kind of milk that. And yeah, but ideally I would like to see him face Jarrett Hurd.
That would be a fight. The only thing is that Jarrett Hurd has really kind of been MIA. I haven't heard much.
Yeah.
He's not on any schedule.
Kind of like Wilder.
And he,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so I think even worse than Wilder, you know, he, when he lost to J-Rock, he came back. Like I said, he didn't look like himself at all. He seemed like he wanted to be a different fighter. I don't know if they're still trying to figure out the pieces to the puzzle, and in the gym, I don't know if he's in the gym, or anything. So that's why I would campaign Laura versus J-Rock. I think it would be a great comeback for J-Rock. See where J-Rock is at, and to see if Laura, the old man, if he still got enough to beat, you know, a good fighter. Because even though J-Rock took that beating from Rosario, I wouldn't completely write him off yet, because he did make a great comeback after being knocked out by Charlo by beating who a lot of guys were referring to as a black Margarito, which was Jarrett Hurd, and look what he did
with,
right? So I'd like to see where both guys are at, you know, especially where J-Rock's head's at. You know, does he make a huge statement against Laura, or is this a good step, you know, closer step? If he beats J-Rock convincingly or even knocks him out, is it a closer step to be more convincing that he's ready for the guys that are 154 title holders?
And I think that's going to be a good fight, actually, between Charlo and Rosario. I think that I'm actually really looking forward to that fight. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Excellent fight, man. I can't wait. What's up, Hamed? What's going on, brother? Glad that you can make it here on Leaving the Ring. Again, we're going to open up the phone lines as soon as we talk about Jose Ramirez and Victor Postol. And then we'd like to hear your guys' take and if you guys were happy with the scorecard and the judging from that fight. Okay. So let's go with, Victor Postol and Jose Ramirez. Happened 12 rounds of boxing. It was at the MGM Conference Center in Las Vegas. Scorecards were 114, 114, 115, 113, and 116, 112. And that was a majority decision for Jose Ramirez. Amilcar, give me your take, bro. What did you think?
I felt it was that kind of a classic fight between the boxer and the pressure fighter. We knew Postol has a good jab. I just didn't think that he punished him enough with his right hand. Obviously, he's not the greatest inside fighter, and he didn't really want to engage there. So, you know, he did what he could on the inside. But I felt that when he had the outside advantage, that, yes, he was touching him with the jab, and it was a very good jab. And I felt that he was effective when he threw the right hand, but I just didn't feel that he did enough with that right hand and with hooks. And I mean, if I was coaching him, I would have suggested he throw some uppercuts as well. I wasn't impressed fully, really, by Ramirez. Even he admitted after the fight that it wasn't his greatest performance. I felt that the fight, though, was telling in terms of a possible match between Josh Taylor and Ramirez. And at this point, I have to pick Josh Taylor because unlike Postol, Josh Taylor can bang on the inside, and he does have power from the outside in that mid range. So, you know, maybe Ramirez will show us some levels that he didn't have to show us against Postol. But based on that performance, I'd have to favor Josh Taylor at this point.
Interesting. Fight fans, you want to call in? Certainly can. 347-215-7. Sorry, let me say it again. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving Ring. What's up, G-Funk? How you doing, brother? You know, man, listen, I thought that first round, when Postol was trying to establish his jab and Jose Ramirez was kind of, you know, swatted away like a fly in front of his face, I thought, okay, this is going to be exactly what a lot of us thought, which was Jose Ramirez was going to run through him. Victor Postol just, you know, really hadn't shown me that he can put it all together. I thought that he needed to have fresh legs. He definitely needed to bring that jab. And in the second round comes out, and guess what? That's exactly who we said needed to be present on Saturday night in Las Vegas, in the bubble. Victor Postol went out there, and he started jabbing him, and he kept his distance, and it really puzzled Jose Ramirez. Now, I don't know whether it's because, you know, what was going on with COVID and all that. I don't want to make excuses. What I want to make is the fact that Victor Postol and Freddie Roach had a good, excellent plan. Freddie Roach understands who his fighter is, which is what you had mentioned, Milcar, which is fighting the outside. He doesn't have an inside fight game at all. You know, his right hand is beautiful when he drops it, and I thought he was dropping his right hand a whole lot. The credit is that, you know, Jose Ramirez, to me, after that fifth round and the talk that Robert Garcia gave Jose Ramirez, because the truth is, I thought, just like Timothy Bradley thought and a lot of other folks thought, he was down on those cards, and I had him winning the second, third, fourth, and fifth round. But Robert Garcia, being a good trainer and an honest trainer as much as he can be, told this fighter, you're losing this fight. You got to go out there. Got to let your hands go. You got to get in the inside. Stop staying in the outside. Jose Ramirez took it to heart. And he went out there and he put work, okay? He went out there and he put work. He tried to get in there and he started banging with them. And his left hook started landing. He started using his jab. And he saw that his jab was being successful against a taller guy. It started to look better. You know, the thing with Victor Postol is that I give him credit. He's got a good jaw. And as well as...
Oh, he does.
Even though he does. And as much as Jose Rodriguez was trying to impose himself on top of him and take over, I did see a Victor Postol try to get it back, regain his posture, and keep that distance. But it was Jose not having any of that. Became competitive. I thought that Jose took over, started winning those last rounds, and I honestly think that the other round that Postol won was, I believe it was the 11th or 12th. I don't have anything written down, you know, but, you know, and so I was okay with Jose Ramirez winning that fight. You know, I thought that Jose won. I thought it was very close. But then I think some folks can make a great argument saying that it was a draw, you know.
I agree.
But I think that Victor Postol really needed to kind of dig deep and do a little bit more in those later rounds, because those last rounds are kind of like the standing rounds for the judges, you know. Those last rounds are the ones, the championship rounds, are the ones that the judges really kind of pay attention. And I saw that Victor just couldn't, you know, press on the gas a little bit more to show that he wanted those rounds, you know. He tried in the last 15 seconds, but that just wasn't enough, you know. And he didn't really leave a big, you know, an overall statement, in my opinion. And I think that's what cost him the fight.
Yeah, honestly, I think another thing that cost him the fight, too, is his age. I have no doubt that a younger Victor Postol would have beat the Ramirez that showed up Saturday.
Right.
But he's 36 years old now, which is pretty old for a 140-pounder. And
yeah,
obviously, I would say he doesn't have the kind of legs in the middle to later rounds that he would have needed. But like you, I thought he was doing very well in the opening rounds. I have no idea what fight Andre Ward was watching. And, you know, I expressed some of my frustration about Andre Ward with you, too.
Right.
I mean, I've met Andre Ward. He was a nice guy when I met him. But he just comes across as extremely arrogant on these telecasts. There's not a single point that Tim Bradley makes that he doesn't think he needs to counter. And it's like almost as if they're boxing while I'm watching the fight. And, you know, he interjects himself. Even when he's discussing, like, the personal stories of fighters, he, like, puts himself into
right.
it. He did that on the undercard fight. And I just don't think he was giving Victor Postol any credit at all for what he was doing. And what was very interesting to me about that is Victor Postol was winning those rounds the way Andre Ward often won rounds, you know? I mean,
yes.
You know, Andre Ward fought behind the jab and every now and again hit you with power punches, but he was happy to fight behind that jab. And he's not the kind of fighter that fights the way Ramirez does. So I just didn't understand what I felt was like extreme bias on his part.
You know, well, both guys have, like I told you, are starting to get underneath my skin or kind of annoying me. Let's say that. They are starting to annoy me.
Yeah.
Tim Bradley and Andre Ward, because to me, it's kind of like they both come at each other with this fighter arrogance, okay? We both know, we all know, guys, you guys are fighters. We all know you guys are accomplished fighters, okay? We don't need to be reminded every single time. And, you know, but I agree with you. When anytime Timothy Bradley says something, he's got something to say. And he does, you know, Bradley will say something that I will go like, that's a good point, you know. But Ward would interject himself by knocking it down or adding to it, you know. And sometimes the add-on is just like, that's exactly what Tim Bradley just said, you know.
Yeah,
and then a lot of times
Bradley,
when I've been
– yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. What are you going to say? No, go for it.
I was just going to say, it's not that Tim Bradley's right all the time. I mean, everyone's right and wrong. It's just that Andre Ward makes it seem as if Tim Bradley's, like, always wrong, regardless of what the point is. And it was during the Barbosa fight on the undercard where he was Joe Tessitore was, like, describing, you know, the difficulties Barbosa faced. And he's like, yeah, you know, fighters have to face these adversities, you know. Actually, that happened to me, too. And it's like, he constantly does that.
Yeah. He's like, and,
you know,
and this,
or he,
and
like,
actually, it was
yeah.
even worse, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
or he belittles the fans. It's like, oh, most people, when they're watching a fight, they don't see this. But when I'm watching a fight, blah, 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 blah. It's like, nah, actually, a lot of people who are watching the fights have fought or have also, you know, been watching boxing a long time, Andre.
Let me ask you this, and everybody
yeah.
that's listening, and even in the chat room, we're going to open up the phone lines right now. Just 1 minute here, 347-215-7598. Don't forget to subscribe, hit that bell button so you're notified when we go on live, and hit the like button for us, okay? So we're on that YouTube rotation here. I'm trying to work on this YouTube channel here, guys. Help me out. Don't forget to hit mm-hmm. that like button for me. who is more, if you're forced to listen to a commentary, who could you sit through? Timothy Bradley and Andre Ward together, or Sergio Martinez and Chris Mannix, or Goosen and Lennox Lewis on Fox Sports? Who would be your choice?
I'm definitely going Goosen and Lennox Lewis.
Goosen and Lennox Lewis. That's because, right there, Goosen.
Because they're not out there trying to argue or prove that one is more knowledgeable than the other. One makes his point, great. Another makes his point, also great. And I also don't think that they interject themselves too much.
I don't think so either. I think, you know,
yeah.
What Goosen, what I like about Goosen is he's obviously, he gives you the opinion of a trainer's eye.
Yes.
And
yeah.
and then Lennox, you know, adds to it as a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. You know, I really do. Whereas you have two fighters, when you have two fighters on the panel, one, the egos, you're going to see the egos automatically just kind of spark up, you know, because one guy wants to sound smarter than the other. And that's what I get with Bradley and Ward. You know, they start kind of throwing this machismo against each other. You know, and like I said, it's almost like a wave of who's done more in the sport. But then when it goes to this zone, I like Sergio Mora, but
yeah.
I cringe when Chris Mannix starts talking about certain things, because we all know that Chris is really not a boxing guy. You know, I mean,
no.
You know, that's not his first love, you know, and Sergio Martinez sometimes can start talking about something that's very in depth that Chris Mannix has no clue in what they're talking about, you know, whereas if you have Mark Kriegel on there, Mark Kriegel at least goes to the gyms. He's in the you know, the gym circuits. He checks out fighters. He would have a lot more knowledge to be able to interact or even debate Sergio Mora on certain things. But you know, Kriegel is on ESPN. So
ESPN,
yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think the Zone did a very good job of putting together their boxing team overall. I mean, you've got Akin Barak, two cartoon characters as part of their team, although obviously unlike an interview, like they take clothes to Canelo and, you know, dress them up and stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous. And then you have, Mannix. I mean, you know, to me, Mannix at best should be doing what Brian Kenny's doing. Kenny's actually really good. I meant to say someone who's like behind the, not behind the mic during the fights, but kind of leading into it. Well, like the lady on Fox Sports, Caleb Plant's wife. He should be doing something like that. But I don't really need to hear him like during the fights.
So Fernando enjoys Mora and Mannix banter. I don't actually tune in and listen. I mean, actually, when he start talking,
you know,
I kind of like throw that volume down. You know what I listen to when it's the Zone?
Yeah.
This is my,
yeah.
I think my go-to is G-Funk's channel, because G-Funk does the commentary. I actually enjoy that.
Oh, yeah.
A lot more. I'll tune
maybe
in.
I'll put on G-Funk. Do that more often.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
also the reason I don't like the banter, it's like, bro, shut the fuck up. Like, you're talking to Sergio Mora. Like, he actually fought. He actually won a world title. Like, I keep hearing the Floyd voice in my head saying, you don't know shit about boxing.
Oh, man. It's a tough job. I'm going to definitely say it's a very tough job. Let's open up the phone lines here on Leaving the Ring, 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing. First caller is, as always, our homeboy here, Fernando. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, Big Dave? What's up, Milker? How you guys doing?
How's it going, man?
Good, brother.
Good, man. It's nice to hear. Well, you too, Dave, but it's always good to hear from a Milker, man, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm real happy. I'm happy you're on the show today.
Thanks, Nando. Good to hear from you,
no,
too.
No worries. Good, brother. Good. I'm glad. Hope you're doing well. So, I don't know. We kind of talked about it on Twitter, Dave, but like I'm starting to, like I'm still on the bandwagon for Ramirez, right? Like I'm a fan of his, right?
Me too. Me too.
Yeah, right. I'm starting to wonder if he's not in the same kind of category as Max Garcia, where he doesn't really belong at welterweight. I mean, like I know Bob Arum has really been pushing that agenda, right? Where the winner of Taylor and Ramirez are going to fight Crawford sometime next year. But to be honest, I'm not sure if that's in the best interest of either fighter, Taylor or Ramirez. You know, especially Ramirez, because I was watching the fight, and to me, Postel looked a lot bigger than Ramirez. And
yeah,
I'm not sure if Ramirez has the size or power for a welterweight.
No.
You know? And
he should not be a welterweight.
No. And then you're going to have a Mikey Garcia and Jose Ramirez as just opponents at welterweight, you know, B-side. You know, and I'm not sure that's your prison, especially if you're on me as a junior welterweight. Not only do you have, you know, maybe a couple fights with Taylor, you don't even know how that turns out. You also have a bunch of lightweights, charismatic lightweights that might be moving up, you know. You got
Absolutely.
Devin Haney. You got Devin Haney, you got Ryan Garcia, and you got Teofimo Lopez, right? So, for
yep,
me,
yes.
I would rather wait on those guys to move up, hang out for them. Then to fight maybe Bud Crawford, get my butt kicked for not a very big paycheck, because I'm not even sure there's that big of a jackpot with fighting Crawford, you know? So because I don't think he sells pay per views. He's not at all charismatic. I mean, he talks a lot on Twitter, but as far as in real life, he's not, you know, he's kind of boring, you know? And
yeah. I agree. Ramirez moving up just serves one purpose, and that's helping Terrence Crawford find an opponent, which also helps Bob Arum. It doesn't, to me, benefit Ramirez at all. I see a fight between Ramirez and Lomachenko or a Teofimo Lopez being a bigger fight, actually, financially, than the fight with Crawford. And let's face facts. Like you said, he does not belong at the welterweight division. He's not even the biggest 140-pounder.
No. No, he's not. And I agree with you, Fernando. His punch is not there. He doesn't have that crack. You know, he's a volume puncher. That's something that you know, is even his team's got to admit. He's a volume guy. He wears you down. You know, he's not a one-punch hitter. He's not a guy that's going to, you know, if he was, then Postel would have been out of there when he landed big shots. But the reason why Victor Postel wasn't able to get out of there, get stopped, is because Victor Postel actually had legs that he was moving. So he didn't accumulate a lot of punishment from Jose Ramirez. Ramirez wasn't able to overwhelm him with his style. And that's what I was impressed by Postel's. But to have any talks about him moving up at this moment, don't see it. And it shouldn't happen. He's got some unfinished business. I'm not going to judge him completely on how he looked and performed against Victor Postel, because I think at the end of the day, the height, the jab, and even that right hand, it may not be one of those, you know, good night pills that we, you know, from other big punchers, but I think that Victor Postel's right hand is very accurate, that it makes you think twice of coming straight in. So I'm still interested in seeing how well Jose Ramirez is going to perform against a Taylor. And I still think it's a very even 50-50 fight in my book.
You know, there's a lot of fights for him at Jiren Walter, not just the lightweights, right? There's still, like, you know, a fight out there with I know Pro Gray already signed with PBC.
Pro Gray's out there.
That's a fight available to him. I wouldn't mind seeing him fight against Hooker again. That was a really good fight. I really enjoyed that one.
Oh, yeah.
And to be honest, like Ramirez has had trouble with these type of fighters before. I mean, a couple years ago when he fought Zepeda, it was kind of a similar situation. A lot of people thought he lost that fight.
Right.
You know? I didn't think he lost that fight personally, but I do see where somebody could think he lost, you know, either against Zepeda or this weekend against Postal. You know, I don't think Postal did quite enough to win the fight, but, you know, it was definitely a competitive fight.
He struggled. I mean, that's the reality. You know what I mean? You know what? I'd rather have the fighter that I have on the pedestal, I'd rather see him struggle than just see him blow through guys every single time, because to me that doesn't make it a very interesting, an interesting fight to tune in. This fight was supposed to be one-sided, and instead what we got was two very game guys that showed us a great display of each other in that in the ring. It was a ring of drama, which we all tune in for. So again, styles make fights, and I said this on Twitter. Styles make fights, and Postal Styles obviously was very troublesome for Jose Ramirez, but I wouldn't write him off.
Who would you my question is who would you like to see the Miz fight next if not Taylor? Just out of curiosity.
Well, the WBO is ordering right now. I was just gonna say WBO is trying to intervene and try to order that an England mandatory fighter who's been waiting for his turn, Jack Catterall, to get
Catterall,
that opportunity.
I was just about to say that. Yeah, and that would be a great fight, especially if COVID, you know, is resolved somehow. He can go over to the UK and use it kind of to build up a fight with Taylor and make it even bigger because Jack Catterall's from out there.
Have him on a phone feature. How about that?
Yeah,
you know,
and that builds a big fight over there in England, you know?
Yeah.
We're not going to have it in the United States.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great idea because when we're going to have fights in the United States, we're kind of like the leper colony of the whole world right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if any big fights happen, more likely to happen in the United States, excuse me, in the UK than in the United States. But, hey, I appreciate you guys taking my phone call. I don't want to, like, take up all the time. It was really good to hear from you, Melkar, and thank you, David. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Nando.
And Kenny's coming back. Yeah, Kenny's coming back. He's fixing everything. It's almost ready, and he'll be back. Hopefully, I'm hoping it's next week he's back. So let everybody know here on Leaving the Ring. Thanks, Fernando. Really appreciate it, man. I think we got I think we have Hamed on the line as well here. Hamed, are you there, brother? What's up?
Yeah, hello, Dave. Milka, how's it going, man?
Good, man. Long time, we'll talk to you.
Got to be late out there in Wales.
Yeah, it's late. Yeah, I was just sorting something out. I just seen you guys were on. I haven't heard from Milka. I know he was on, I think, last week, but I couldn't hear what you were saying. I think it's on YouTube, but I'm not sure if it's on Blog Talk as well. But I thought I'd call in because I watched the fight the other night, and I pretty much agree with a lot of the things you guys are saying. I just called the fight to draw, but it wasn't a robbery. I just hate it when people say stuff like that when it's a close fight. Like, that takes the shine off the fight, although there were some people trying to make it out like Ramirez won 8 to 9 rounds. He was far from a decided fight. Whichever way you thought the guy won, I just can't see one or the other guy winning 8 to 9 rounds. I can see how some people might have had Ramirez winning 8 rounds. I think it might have been about a round out, but I think the right guy won. Like, those are fair scorecards. I had a draw, but 7-5 Ramirez, I could see that. There was a round, I believe, I gave to Postol. I was thinking that's a toss-up round, but I don't know about Ramirez moving up to welterweight. Even fighting Josh Taylor, is listed in both 5'10". I personally think Josh Taylor might be too big for him. I was up Taylor Progre. I wasn't too far from the ring. I saw Progre take some big right hands. I could see Josh Taylor fighting at welterweight and competing with some of the guys. Personally, I don't think neither guy will beat Crawford, but I think Ramirez will lose. He's come close now a couple of times, but that's still a good fight. I personally think a better fight would have been Ramirez and Progre. I'm not sure what you guys think, but I think that would have been a really good fight.
That would be an awesome fight, man, to tell you the truth. I actually would love to see that next. You know, but, you know, I mean, they're going – Ramirez and his team have been pretty clear. Their message has been pretty clear of what they're after. You know, they want to unify the division. They want that Josh Taylor. Progre's just kind of you know, I mean, I like what Progre is doing on Twitter. You know, he's stayed in his case. He's trying to antagonize them. That's exactly what he need to do and stuff. You know, the problem is though, is if the WBO, which the purse bid is supposed to go in negotiation, I believe in 2 weeks or something like that. I think I read. You know, Progre may be the guy standing out there, but Josh Taylor may. I don't know if he would be willing to give Regis a rematch. You know, I'm not sure if they want to risk that. because it takes away if he loses against Jose Ramirez, because that was such a good fight as well, you know, pretty close.
Do you think they'd want to risk the mandatory as well? Like, I personally don't think we need to see that fight. I know we want
right.
to see it for all the belts, but we know the number one and two guy is the Jeff Taylor and Ramirez.
Right.
It's sometimes
right.
hard to make fights for undisputed. Like, I personally think it's the same with Fury and Joshua as well. I posted on Twitter, like, I'd rather, if they can't make the fight with Fury and Joshua and Taylor and Ramirez for all the belts, I'd rather they just vacate the WBO belt, both guys. Joshua and what's his name, Ramirez. I'd rather
right.
just see the two fight, because Taylor's fighting, I believe, in 2 weeks, or is it next week, something like that. And if Ramirez fights Catterall, I'm not sure if Josh Taylor will want to sit around. Like, he could have a fight.
I don't think so.
Either of these
yeah.
guys could lose, obviously. So
yeah, and you know what? Here's the
just
thing.
Just fight each other.
I think that's what's going to happen, because, you know, as we know, Top Rank, they will pay step aside money. And also, because here's the thing, is that the fight is already been brewed up enough that fans want to see it, and if Bob Arum's plan is to move up Ramirez or Taylor, this is the best way of doing it. Saying that, you know, by making a backstory for the case for either one of those guys winning, unifying, saying that Crawford now faces a guy that got a guy that's moving up that did exactly what he did before he moved up to welterweight, and it makes it a good story, a backstory for them to face each other. It's a more of a sellable fight, so I think that's where Bob is headed to, and
I
think that's the right move.
I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. I want to see Terrence Crawford fight a welterweight. You know, I don't need to continue to see him fighting guys moving up in weight or fighting guys that are not championship level welterweights. Josh Taylor fights on September 26th, actually. It's another studio fight at the BT Studios. So he's fighting a Thai fighter. So we'll see how that goes for him. But I know that's Bob Arum's plan, David, but like Nando, I just don't think it's good for either Taylor or for Ramirez, given the amount of talent that's still at 140 and that's at 135 and can move up.
I agree with you guys. Right. But here's the thing, is that we got to remember, Bob is trying to make whatever back he put into Crawford. Okay. And like I said, I mean, it's a business by the end of the day. And I think he won't play with the other promoters until he uses up all his resources. So this is a reality that he knows that he could sell this to the casuals. He could sell this fight. Why? Because you have a unified 140 now moving up to face one of the guys that's considered the pound for pound in boxing, and also did the same accomplishment of the guy moving up. So it makes it a great backstory to sell.
Yeah, it just sounds like a Bob problem. It doesn't sound like a Ramirez problem. You know, Ramirez
is
a guy who can
sell
20,000 seats. You know,
right?
He can go on on a little world tour and defend his titles a bit. Like, I get that Bob's in a tight spot. Yeah,
I'll go
ahead.
I'll say this. When Gassiev fought Usyk, that was for all the belts. I thought the same thing. If Gassiev wins, I don't want him to move up to heavyweight, because I thought he'd be outsized and he was big enough. But when Usyk won, I thought Usyk would have a chance against guys like AJ, guys like Dillashaw White or whatever. Obviously, unless he goes straight into him, I think big fights, he would struggle. I thought if he climbed to the, gets used to the weight, he would get on, because he's a big guy. Like, as an amateur, he fought, I think, a heavyweight. Josh Taylor, I was at the Progre fight. I thought Josh Taylor looked like a much bigger guy than Progre, and I think he's bigger than Ramirez as well. So I think I could see, if he wins, and he wins emphatically against Ramirez, down the line, I think him and Crawford could be a big fight. I mean, who is Crawford meant to fight? If he can't get guys like Thurman, Right. Pacquiao in the ring.
That's not Josh Taylor. That's not Josh Taylor's problem. And as long as Josh Taylor can make 140, maybe he's struggling to make 140. I don't know. But if he's not struggling to make 140, I would just stay right at 140. I mean,
no, but I think he said he wants to move up. If you've won all the belts and you're a big guy who's, I mean, I wouldn't say struggling, but having problems cutting down. I mean, what else is there to do? Because once you clean that division out, I can't think of any other guys at that weight class. Like, he's already beaten Postol and Progre. And if he beats Ramirez, I agree though, if Ramirez wins, I don't know if he should really move up, even if he's cleaned out. Because I still want to see Ramirez and Progre fight. And I don't think Ramirez is big enough. But if we got to look at Crawford, he's also a guy who's come up from lightweight. So I know he's obviously a big guy as well himself as a welterweight. But if him and Josh Taylor fight, that could be a fight that the size difference ain't that big. I don't know, but we got to see how Josh Taylor gets on.
And guys, we got to remember this. This is prize fighting. Both those guys, Jose Ramirez and even Josh Taylor, and it's a great point what Hamed said, he beat all these guys already. If he beats Jose Ramirez, he beat him. Well, the bigger money is to move up and go after Crawford.
Yeah, that's true. I definitely agree with it more for Josh Taylor than I do for Ramirez. And,
Ramirez has unfinished business. I think if he beats Josh Taylor, I think he still can stick around at 140 because he could fight Progress and he could fight other guys. You know, it's unfinished business there. You know, leaving the 140 division without fighting Regis, to me, it doesn't make sense because there are other fights there that he could still that's very sellable and he could fill up the arena in Fresno, California.
Absolutely.
That's what Usyk did. Usyk, when he won the tournament, I forgot he actually fought Tony Bellew, who still was conceived top five, I believe, cruiserweight, maybe even top three, because the other guys all took losses. I personally think probably top five is fair. But if Ramirez wins, I think he should stick around and fight Progre. But it depends what happens now, because if he's fighting Catterall, I think the Josh Taylor fight then means we'll be pulled back to maybe mid to late 2021. I personally think it'd be better if both these guys are fighting next, but it depends what they want to do. If they don't want to risk losing that belt, then they'll have to fight Catterall unless they could pay some step-aside money. But I do think Top Rank and Bob Arum signed Taylor thinking that if he beats Ramirez, they want to put him in with Crawford. I think Josh Taylor would have a better chance against Crawford than Ramirez. I think Ramirez will get beaten by Crawford. I can't see him beating Crawford. I think that'll be a mismatch.
Yeah.
Well, we got to see how Ramirez looks against Taylor before we start making that. You know what I mean? Let's see how he looks. It could be a completely different fight than what we saw on Saturday night with Jose Ramirez versus Victor Postol. It could be completely different. Styles make fights. So I'm still up in the air with that. I'm not sure if, you know, I agree with you guys. He is a bit smaller, but I want to see what he does with Taylor. If he cannot handle Taylor and move him around and bully him a bit, then I would be on board with that. I would say, he shouldn't do it. But at the end of the day, it's not our decision. You know what I mean? In a perfect world, that he should stick around at 140 if he wins that title against Josh Taylor and face the other guys there in that division. I'd like to see that happen. Why not stick around, you know?
Can I say this? Another thing we've got to factor. I know Styles make fights, and I hate using triangle theories, but when Crawford fought Postol, that was 2016. I believe he dropped him a couple of times and won about, I believe it was at least 8 or 9 rounds, maybe even more. I think some people had 10 rounds with Crawford, but that was about over 4 years ago. And Taylor, when he fought Postol, that was a couple of years ago as well. They both dropped, Postol. And I thought beat Postol a lot more emphatically than Ramirez. Although the Postol-Taylor fight was closer than the scorecard suggested. I'm not sure if Ramirez is maybe not as good as some people think, or maybe he might be having some problems stylistically, because The Zepeda fight, I thought that he definitely could have lost, or at least it should have been a draw. And this fight, I think you could make an argument it could have been a draw. I don't think it was a robbery or anything like that, but I'm not sure, because Postol, he's been very inactive himself. Like, yeah. And he's
right,
37. He's 37.
Yeah, and he was flying all over the world, as they said in the telecast. You know, between Ukraine, China, Ukraine, Los Angeles, Ukraine, Las Vegas. Like, he was constantly having making flights and having his training interrupted.
Exactly. Yep. You know, Nato put out there, Timofimo Lopez pulls off the upset against Lomo. That's a massive fight there for Ramirez. You know, or even for Josh Taylor.
That's a good point.
That's an awesome fight.
Yeah.
Great.
And he said that he's struggling to make weight and that he wants to move up, Teofimo.
Exactly.
So that's definitely a big fight. Before you go, Hanan, what did you think of Dubois' performance over the weekend?
I thought there was a good knockout, but I thought he was a bit stiff. But the guy he was fighting was like, no hooper. Like, I do think Dubois is a slight favorite against Joe Joyce, although I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. I'm not sure if Dubois got a gas tank for 12 rounds, but I do think that's a
fight
that will determine how good. Yeah, that's a fight will determine how good both guys are. Although I think we've seen a lot more of Joe Joyce. Before I go, I just wanted to ask both of you guys, how do you see the Teofimo Lopez Lomachenko fight now with the more, what is it, 6-7 weeks out or whatever? I can't remember when the fight is, but initial thoughts, do you think it's a closer fight than some people think, or do you think Lopez is live? Because I've seen some people think Lopez is going to walk through him, where other people think it might be one or two fights too early.
Amilcar, you want to go first with this one?
Yeah, you know, it's tough to say. We talked about this, I think, about 3 weeks ago, I essentially said that I think that Lomachenko's boxing ability is next level, and he's still not, you know, fully past it in terms of his prime. I know he's not the biggest, but I do think that his boxing ability is there, and that if he stays focused and doesn't get dropped the way he did against Linares, that I see him at this point winning the fight.
You know, I'm still trying to play it in my head. I still need more time to kind of look at both guys. And, you know, I think this is a much more harder fight to predict, because even though Lopez has shown us he's got, you know, great power, you know, Lomachenko has shown us that when he needs to turn it on, he turns it on. You know, they both got excellent footwork. Lopez knows how to leverage, I think, a little bit more when he throws, you know, when he commits to his punches. And I think that, with that being said, that Lomachenko may take advantage of that. You know, when you suck in the younger lion that has no fear because he hasn't had a taste of, you know, loss or been roughed up, and I think he's been in competitive fights. But
he
I think that the trick in the bags for Lomo is still a lot more, you know. So to me, it's just a closer fight. I'm not sure who I'm going to pick, but I think it's a far more closer fight.
I mean, the reason I at this point I'm saying Loma is because during the Nakatomi fight, I just saw Lopez that was kind of out of ideas and, you know, wasn't really able to make significant adjustments. And trust me, Lomachenko is going to force him to make not one adjustment, but 3, 4, 5, or 6.
Tommy fight, though, I mean, he was a taller guy. Loma's not that tall.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, you did say, yeah, it's true.
Yeah. It's
going to be competitive. I see it being competitive.
What are you saying, Hamid?
I agree with the milk on you, and I know what you're both saying. The thing, though, when all Nakatani was doing was stepping back. I don't know, that night, I believe the Maxim Dadashev did pass away. It was a weird night where I don't believe the atmosphere in the arena would have been good. So I'm not sure. That could have been an off night. The opponent was a lot taller. But I feel like this, at the moment, I'm not sure. I do think Lomachenko obviously is a heavy favorite on paper. But if it's a competitive fight and it goes really late and Lopez is hanging in there with him, I believe Lomachenko could get old overnight. This is a fight where he could lose. Because he's been getting touched up a lot at lightweight. On the flip side, I believe this is a big jumping class for Lopez. This could be as big as jumping class for when Canelo fought Mayweather. On the also flip side, I've got to say in defense, so is Lomachenko is very offensive-minded fighter. So is Lopez. So I'm not sure. Maybe Loma just was struggling with guys who are defensive, and maybe this could be a perfect style matchup, but it's definitely an intriguing fight. But I got to jump off. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, brother.
I appreciate it. I'll speak to you guys soon.
Thanks, man.
No worries, man. Guys, don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe to the channel. And as well as hit that little bell so you're notified here on the show. We got to get going, man. You know, we started late, but it's pretty late up in New York, and a Mill Car's got to get going. Just really quick, my final thought about Lomachenko and Lopez. With Lomachenko, again, I'm still not going to give you my pick yet, but I'm going to give you some things that I am looking at. Is that Lomachenko, though, is a very intelligent guy where he knows what you bring to the table. What's your best punch? And, you know, Lopez sometimes kind of relies on that big power behind that right hand. If he could eliminate and nullify that right hand and really kind of drag him into those mid rounds, because those four or five rounds, to me, is very crucial for Lomachenko. He's got to be on his toes against Lopez. And, you know, Lopez brings a lot. I know he may be the fresher guy, the newer guy and everything, but I think that his youth is going to come into play a lot. He's explosive, and he comes down that pipe pretty fast, you know. Anyways, as always, guys, it's fun to have you guys on here on Leave the Ring. We'll see you guys Monday here again, and we'll be back again at 5 p.m., hopefully. If not, it'll be 6 p.m., but 5 p.m. Pacific time and 8 p.m. Eastern time. As always, don't drink and drive, because you will spill a beer. You guys have a great night.
Thanks, Dave. You too.